Welcome to All Sides Chefs in the City. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. We always talk local on the show, but today we talk local as in food grown within a few hundred miles of Central Ohio and the farm-to-fork or farm-to-table movement in restaurants and our kitchens at home. Coming up, we'll hear from the co-owner of A&R Creative Group. That's the force behind the likes of Crest Gastropub and many other local eateries. Joining us, as usual, are WOSU food critics, Rich Terapak Sr. Welcome back.
Thanks
also,
Ann.
Stephen Stover, welcome.
Hi, Ann.
And we're kicking off the conversation with a longtime grower, Kathy Rhodes of Rhodes Farm Market. If you want to read more about Rhodes, you can check out the blog by Steve Stover. You can find it at the link on our website at WOSU.org/allsides. Welcome to the show, Kathy Rhodes.
Thank you very much for the opportunity.
Rhodes Farm Market has been open since 1958.
Wow.
It's a multifaceted operation now, but it started as a roadside stand in Circleville, and I know you weren't born yet, but how has it changed over the years?
Well, when it started, there were canneries in Circleville that required peas and beans and pumpkins and corn to be canned and processed. So, therefore, the farmer would have a little extra produce and would sell by the roadside. And that kind of intrigued and become a passion of my husband. And so over the years, to develop diversity to include all our family members, it's really grown.
How big is it now? How do you measure the size of Rhodes now?
Well, we're still a small family-owned business. It seems larger, but actually, it's just a diversity of products that we grow that makes it seem a little larger.
Rhodes has been named one of the revolutionary 100 independent garden centers in the United States. What's the significance of that? What does that mean?
Well, that's my daughter who runs the garden center, and you do have to subscribe to certain practices and skills and develop to be one of the more well-known. It's not in size, but it's just in the operation and management and contributing to the community of the garden center.
Steve, what struck you about it on your last visit? You've been going there for a gazillion years.
Mm-hmm. I just couldn't believe how incredible the operation is. They have a warehouse. They were at the time picking 3,500 quarts of strawberries every day.
The season's over. Oh, it makes me so sad.
I don't know. Kathy, is it over?
Is it?
We're still picking strawberries.
Really?
Wow.
We took some to Bexley last night. We hope to have some on Saturday.
At Worthington? You know, every time
I've been
go there,
every week.
Every week, though, Kathy, they say, okay, this could be the last week. You know?
That's
a good sales technique.
Yeah.
I fall for it.
Yeah.
Tell us about your crop this year, yeah.
Yeah, what has it been like this year?
Well, everything's been phenomenal. I mean, even right now, our sweet corn, with this heat and the rains, the corn is just growing so fast. I mean, you can just hear it grow. It's just phenomenal. And our blackberries, we're already shipping to Kroger's. So if you see a package that says Nature's Partners, it comes from our farm and Kroger's. We also do Walmart and the Meijer stores. And then we do like six farmers markets a week. So, you know, you can find our blackberries and strawberries and peaches everywhere.
So the peaches are out already?
Yeah.
Everything this year is 2 weeks early.
Wow. Because of a warm April, I imagine.
And a mild winter.
Yeah. And no frostbite in April.
Right.
Thank goodness.
Yeah. So you'll see early apples and peaches and corn this weekend at your farmer's market.
Corn this weekend?
Oh, yes. In abundance.
In London?
In abundance.
In abundance at Worthington.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, you said you had the largest crop ever of strawberries by double, and you said they were so early, and you started picking May 4th, that you actually had a second crop?
We have renovated the patch, and we keep picking off the old patch, but in a couple weeks, we'll be starting in on this new renovated patch. And last year, we had strawberries up until September.
Wow.
Oh,
is that the Everbearing brand, or is that something different?
It is called an Everbearing brand, but it's not just your typical Everbearing berry. It's a California-type berry that they cultivate out there for a very long growing season. So it's more of a long growing season berry. Mm.
Does that end up being that bigger berry, too?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
And so flavorful. I mean, the flavor right now has never been as good, mm-hmm. For the whole season. It's just wonderful.
Do different berries put up differently? Like, I think I got those larger berries from you at the beginning of the season, And they had a different consistency to them. I wasn't sure about how they'd put up.
Well, that could have been the Sweet Anne.
Okay.
And a Sweet Anne is a larger, lighter colored berry, yeah, but more full flavored.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I made jam with the grandkids, and it was just extraordinary with the flavor.
Okay.
So it's more the flavor as to how they put up.
Yeah.
You, one of the most interesting things is how you trellis your blackberries. And I'm told that you are the largest blackberry producer east of the Mississippi.
Wow.
Can you talk about blackberries?
That's true, because you have to really specialize in it and, you know, just sort of focus on it to do that. And that's what my son Brett does, is focus on our blackberry growing operation.
And how long is the season for blackberries? Will it reach till September as well?
Oh, sure. Yeah. It reaches till September as well.
How does this trellis operation work? I thought that was very cool.
Right. Well, mainly it's a wire system on an arm that lays in different directions during the year according to whether you need winter protection, whether you need sunlight, whether you need pollination, whether you need shade. You can kind of manage the arm to manage the vines accordingly. And so it's quite an elaborate system.
Well, you mentioned that you sell your blackberries all over the place. That was there a day when Meyer wouldn't, they only bought blackberries from a certain grower somewhere else?
Well, you have to have a marketing firm. It's nothing that we personally can negotiate.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And so we have an international marketing group that actually comes into our cooler facility. And they do the logistics for us, and they make the contacts with the company. And this company is one who may secure fruit from over in South America, from in Mexico, from California, from the South. So it's a pretty elevated professional group that does this for us. But then here again, you have to meet very, very strict food safety requirements in order to do this.
Is there more demand, do you think, for local growers?
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Because Meyer, Kroger, the rest of them, they want to say this is local, right?
Well, that's true. And they'll feature the farmer as to say that it is local. But also the grocery store wants the fruit more year-round. And so, therefore, they'll seek it from other locations,
sure,
and bring it in just to have it more year-round, because people create the demand for the fruit.
That's what, the last 10 years that there's been this huge surge of interest in local produce?
I think so, and I think it continues to evolve and continues to change, but still very strong, I think.
And you sell to Kroger, Walmart, Heinen's, and did you say Meyer?
Meyer.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Wow.
You know, I see a lot of people posting on Facebook about what they've picked, you know, whether strawberries or blueberries or blackberries or whatever it is at the farm. It's hard work, but they seem to like it. Has that ebbed, or is it still popular?
Well, pick your own has changed a lot. It's not as strong as it used to be.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
It's more the consumer doesn't consume as much, and it may mean that the grandmother brings the grandchildren for the farm experience.
Yeah.
But then on the other side, when you have an operation like ours, where for food safety reasons, when we sell to the larger entities, we can't really let the public come in and touch the fruit. We have to be very, very careful.
Yeah, you wouldn't want our grandchildren there. That's for
no.
sure.
Yeah.
Heaven knows where their hands have been. But
right. But
do you have, so you don't have U-Pick at your place anymore?
No, we're not allowed to do U-Pick.
Interesting.
And in our community, we don't have the population,
yeah,
such as in Columbus suburbs. You know, they have more of a population and can do this. So, but that's why we try to provide an abundance of the fruit at the farmers markets, so they don't have to come pick it.
So talking about picking, how many, what kind of staff crew do you have,
yeah,
to do that? That's
a
lot of berries.
Yeah, we do bring in a temporary labor force of about 50 individuals to pick the crops in the short season, you know, that we pick till September.
Mm-hmm.
So it does. It takes a lot of hand labor, and it's nothing that's been mechanized yet. And I'm not sure that picking berries can be, although they're working on robots to do it.
Yeah, I can't imagine, you know, blackberries being picked by a robot.
No.
Yeah.
Well,
so
they
delicate.
Get more of them than I do, because I eat them as I pick them.
Well,
that's
my
problem.
And that's the problem with pick your own. When you go to weigh at checkout, you know, you have to weigh the person as well.
Weigh the kids, I know.
Yeah.
That's what happened at Rothschild's when
right.
you sedate the kids.
Seems
yeah.
like you have a very early and fabulous peach crop this year after a couple years of not having
yeah.
peaches in Ohio at all.
Because of late frost.
Yeah. What's the story, Kathy?
Well, we've never had two peach crops in a year, in a row, like we have this year. Generally, you're lucky to get a crop every so many years, and sometimes it's every 5 or 6 years. But we've had two peach crops in a row, and it's the weather. You didn't have winter damage to the trees and to the fruit. And then with the early spring, it brought the fruit on to ripen. So it's been extraordinary for the public to be able to have such nice peaches 2 years
They're
in a row.
They're really good. We've been eating a peach every day.
Love a good peach. But it's real particular how you have to let them ripen. I mean, once you pick them, you gotta let them sit out for a day or so.
Well, you can't pick it too ripe or it won't last,
right.
Even the drive home. So therefore, you pick it just when you know it's ripe and ready, take it home, lay it on your counter, just be patient for a day or so, and you can enjoy the wonderful flavor and juice out of it.
It really is the most wonderful time of the year. Yeah. I'm giddy about local sweet corn's going to be here, and you have tomatoes now, too. My tomatoes haven't come in yet, but you've got tomatoes in now? I bought a basket last Saturday.
We do. Okay. A lot of individuals, homeowners, are having difficulty getting their tomatoes to produce. Yeah. And a lot of that is lack of pollination, lack of calcium, or just maybe weather-related.
Calcium. Mm-hmm.
So if we were to fertilize them more, what would we do? Because I've got two that are getting there.
Well, you just have to look at the calcium. That's the best intake that the tomatoes, develop by. But on the other hand, a commercial grower does a lot to bring the crop on early. Such as here again, covers and tunnels and greenhouses and things to kind of protect and bring on the heat earlier.
They have these huge tarps that are as big as a football field that they cover things with.
That's true. Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you what's killing me. I've actually had a good crop this year, and my volunteers have been fantastic, actually. But it's the deer. They're,
I know.
It's we had some pea pods the other day, and we were like, and I wanted to have one. My husband's like, you got to wait. It's not quite ready. I'm like, okay. And then, it was fine for
the deer. It was ready for the deer.
The deer were all ready for it.
Until we fenced ours in, we did defensive picking. We'd pick stuff a little before it was ripe, before the varmentia could get a hold of them and take one bite out of them.
Yeah.
They didn't look like there were any varmints when I was at the farm.
We use sound systems.
Maybe that's why I felt so crazy.
Really? Like high-pitched or something like that?
Yeah, in different pitches. And it changes. The pitches change. And we just sort of drive through the fields with a Kubota, and it kind of scares them away. And once you scare them away so often, then they don't tend to come back.
Huh.
So
we could put the Grateful Dead on or something.
and you put out a perch for a falcon.
Falcon.
Falcon, And there are hawks and falcons. And they're a good predator, capturing, bird or, predator. Yeah. And you just try to use
smaller critters,
you just try to use natural ways. And we do use the electric fence. We have a deer population in the area, so we do invest in, 9-foot-tall fences and then some electric fence just to keep them from entering the crop area.
Does the sound also keep – I'm interested in that. Does it also keep away birds, though?
Well, that's mainly what it was developed for.
Oh, because you want to keep away from your berries, right?
Right.
Okay. Yeah, I don't
right.
want to do that in my backyard. I want the birds to come. So,
right. Yeah, so you have to make a choice.
Yeah.
If you love the deer and you want the deer to come, then you have to feed them with your crop.
Kathy Rhodes, is there much demand from local restaurants for your produce?
They know who we are, and they know where our produce is available. They tend to buy from other sources that they know carry maybe our produce.
Meijer.
But they can buy directly from you?
Oh, they can. And the best thing to do is for them to come to the farmer's markets and get it fresh. It's difficult to deliver it in small quantities.
Sure.
But like Zoo Amici's downtown, oh my goodness, they come to our markets once or twice a week and buy our produce to include in their menus. So they do. You'll find them at farmer's markets, and we don't always know who they are. You don't always know who's a chef.
Mm-hmm.
But they do. They shop the farmer's markets to get the most they can local.
Well, thank you very much, Kathy Rhodes, for your time today. I appreciate it.
Well, you're more than welcome anytime, and I invite you down to the farm for a visit.
I will.
I gotta get some peaches.
Yeah, peaches. Yeah, or I visit you every week at the Worthington Farmers Market.
Yeah, I'll see you tomorrow early.
Okay, introduce yourself next time.
Okay,
Anna,
will
thank
do.
You.
You okay. Bet. It's Kathy Rhodes. She's one of the owners of the Rhodes Farm Market out there in Circleville. Coming up, we're going to hear from one of the co-owners of the group that is behind the likes of the Crest Gastropub in Clintonville. So stay with us. We're talking about local food today and that farm-to-fork, farm-to-table experience. You're listening to All Sides Chefs in the City on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides Weekend Chefs in the City. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. My co-host, WSU food critics Steve Stover and Rich Terapek, are also with me. We're talking local food today. We're always talking local, but we're focusing on the movement known as farm to table or farm to fork, the idea that the produce and livestock in season drives the menu. We just heard from Kathy Rhodes of the Rhodes Farm Market. Joining us now is Abed Al-Shahal. He's co-owner of A&R Creative. That's the family-owned company behind a growing bevy of Central Ohio eateries, including the Crest Gastropub, Alchemy Juice Bar, and Trism, and many others. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you for having me.
Listeners, we're talking local today, as I said. Share your ideas for where to eat local and where to buy local foods in Central Ohio. Call 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org, and we'll pick up on that in the next segment. If you have something to talk about A&R Creative, you can give us a call right now as well, 614-292-8513. I read your mission statement, and it's not just about food. It's about local businesses, local economy, jobs, innovation, and the environment. How did that all come about?
You know, as organic as it possibly could have, we've been at this. We opened up our first restaurant in 2013. It was just a bar on OSU campus, kind of on the outskirts, called 4th Street Patio.
Has it been that recently? I mean, it seems like.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
When did you open the Crest?
Well, actually, let me take a step back. You know, everything kind of happened in a big flash. The Crest was 2012, 2013.
Okay, yeah.
Before that, we opened up 4th Street Patio, which was around 2009.
Yeah.
It was around the same time that I started college. And, everything happened really rapidly. The 4th Street was it was our first time really opening up a restaurant. Mm-hmm. Our big broadliner, U.S. Foods at the time, was who helped us even set up the kitchen. We had really no idea what we were getting ourselves into. It was my two brothers who founded that, and really the local approach there was we were at the forefront of the craft beer movement.
Sure.
And that was our introduction into local foods or local sourcing, and evolved pretty rapidly. The Crest was the flagship and really where the explosive growth happened.
Yeah.
You actually took local sourcing to a whole new level when you had gardens and a roof garden at the Crest. Can you talk about how that happened?
Yeah, you know, my job kind of coming in early on was the sustainable mission behind the businesses. My background is nutrition, and part of nutrition is the closer the food is, the more nutritional value that it holds, and the more flavor that it holds. So really the purpose of growing the food was I had no idea where to get it locally, you know, early on, and that was the first idea. But the biggest benefit, aside from sourcing it and having it there, is just the awareness that it raises.
Right, yeah.
And
it's fun to see the gardens out front.
Yeah.
Tell them about how the whole setup is.
Yeah,
so it's a roof garden at Crest?
So we do have a roof garden.
And there's some raised beds in the front as well.
Okay.
Yeah,
the ground level has the most growing.
Okay.
We have, right now, we have tomatoes, we have cucumbers, we have peppers going.
Do you have to patrol? Can I stop by at 2 in the morning and buy?
I have a deer obsession these days.
Don't mean to give anybody any ideas.
Our philosophy is if people are taking the food, they probably need it. So,
yeah.
You know,
that was mine with the Franklin Park garden, little garden plot. Things would just be ripe and
you'd
stop by and they disappear. Yeah. But yeah. They needed it, so it's fine.
So yeah, we still have gardens on the roof. We learned the hard way of how not to design gardens on the roof. So since we're kind of in reconstruction right now. We're working on getting solar on the roof right now.
What's the hard way? I mean, you said you learned the hard way. What was wrong? What did you amend?
We should have used a more sustainable type of wood. It's called teak wood.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
It's kind of a compressed sawdust with some other materials in it. It's a proprietary blend. Rather than using just wood, just the amount that we had to water it, the sun just beaming on and beaming off, just rotted out the wood very quickly.
Okay.
So on one portion of the roof. So the other portion we still have.
Can you still have cocktails up there?
Yeah, so that's so.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, we hold a lot of events up there. We held a small little wedding reception on the roof. And yeah, it's just
very cool.
Really the whole approach of the Crest, the local sourcing is... that was what we've kind of built the mission on, but really it's just been the connectivity to the community around us, the education of the gardens, the community gathering, just like a modern day town hall or platform for social change. You know, like whether you want to have a beer with your friends or you want to just eat some good food or you want to hold an environmental event, you know, I think the whole approach to local sourcing, the importance is the relationship building. You know, the food's good. It's good to support your local farmer, but what it does from opening up conversations that aren't otherwise had, that's really what we're passionate about and really what holds our mission strong.
You're listening to All Sides Weekend, Chefs in the City. We're talking local, that whole farm to table, farm to fork idea. My guest, is Abed Al-Shahal. He's co-owner of A&R Creative Group, which is the group behind the Crest Tavern and many others, including tourism, which we want to talk about. Also with me, my co-hosts, Stephen Stover and Rich Terapak Sr. They are both food critics for WOSU. You can see their blogs and other this and that on our Chefs in the City website. So check that out. There's a link on our website at wosu.org/allsides. What are the big challenges of farm-to-table, though, in Central Ohio? Are there none? Is it all just easy going?
Well, definitely from a logistics standpoint, I think that's one of the hardest pieces. You know, when we were a small restaurant group and we first opened up the Crest, really had all hands on deck. I was working closely with the chef at the time, sourcing the food, maintaining the relationships. And as we started growing and I had to step away, you really realize the importance of the relationship. You know, it's not just about sourcing food. It's, is that chef passionate about it, or can that chef maintain that relationship, or can mm-hmm. the farmer maintain that relationship? Because that's really where it begins. It's not the same as just ordering off a checklist. There's this need to really like the person and enjoy the person that you're working with, and it's this kind of reciprocated synergy that occurs that... maybe we're not organized enough to really force our chefs to do it, you know, but it always works best when there's a strong relationship built and one that people feel like they're voting with their dollar.
And everybody knows there are Anthony Bourdains out there. They can be less than pleasant from time to time.
Right, right. And just from a logistics standpoint, one of the early struggles, I think Central Ohio's came a very long way from a logistics standpoint, was aggregating farmers. When we first opened the Crest, you know, I'd always say we had 12 farmers coming at 12 different times of the day.
Yeah.
And it was a logistical nightmare. The prep mm-hmm. team would have to start and stop and check in orders. And it was just really chaotic. Since there's been a couple, I like to call them micro distributors who've emerged, who are focused. Great River Organics is one of them. I know they're supplying to a lot of restaurants. Yellowbird is another one who really works with not just local farmers, because to us, it's a lot more than local farmers. It's who's using sustainable practices, who's growing those. You know, you could have a local Monsanto farm, right, you know, 2 hours away growing soybeans and wheat. But is their mission aligned with ours? So it's okay. A lot more than local to us.
Hmm.
Huh. you're the sustainability strategist. I read that.
Yeah, it's evolved now.
Okay.
But early on, that was my role within the company, you know, the idea of people, the environment, sustainable local food economies was really a big aspect of my job. We have a green team now. We have another sustainability strategist who's taken my role. His name's Zach McGuire. My job's now kind of evolved more into the business development
okay.
and concept development. You know, we have a very diverse...
Which obviously has gone well because you now have 10 restaurants, is that right?
Yeah, 10 I think 9 restaurants, 10 businesses total.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
Since 2009. Amazing.
Yeah. I'm anxious to hear about Trism.
Yeah. Yeah, so Trism is our most ambitious concept yet, I believe. It's, you know, on the iconic corner of Chittenden and High, taking over the old Eddie George location,
okay.
which was
yep.
a staple on OSU campus. It's a fast casual eatery. It's a bar. It's an event space. I say it's our most ambitious one yet because it's something, it's uncharted territory for us to really hold a venue space, an event space, a place that's really transformative. You could come in the morning, grab yourself a smoothie, some coffee, maybe a piece of artisan toast. As the day evolves, it opens up more into a bar. And the event space really gives us a lot of flexibility to hold things like book releases, to late night dancing, to a poetry slam. We just booked a Bollywood event. You know, we really want to have that. Yeah, I always talk about the Crest and how we use that as a community gathering space. It's a really tight restaurant. It's
yeah.
a small footprint.
Yep.
Now to actually have a 6,500 square foot restaurant.
That's soft furniture and it's comfortable gathering places and things like that.
It's definitely more of your neighborhood type of pub. You know, we've made events work in there, but to now actually have the space to really host events where we engage the community around us. We don't want to necessarily hold an identity at Trism. We want Trism's identity to transform with the people who are gathering there.
Booze smoothies?
No. We are cold-pressed cocktails.
Really?
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, we do have... Yeah,
the other good example, I think, of bringing the community together and probably a real... kickoff for the Italian Village was the market at Italian Village. I think you can see everything else is going on in the neighborhood now.
Yeah, it's,
all
it's,
your competitors are
what's
there.
Going on at the market? I mean, what's that like?
We are very excited about the market. We just recently brought on, I think about a year now, the former chef of Angry Bear Kitchen, Tyler Minnis. I think he's the
he's
most,
great.
If not, you know, one of the top three most talented chefs in the city. He's just immensely passionate, very, very humble, just loves teaching. And really what he's doing to the menu at the market is something I've never seen. I've worked with a lot of great chefs. I've traveled the world. And
we should go.
Really his approach to food is very in line. And, you know, when you're living it and breathing it daily and you travel, you feel like you've seen a lot. But just what he does is... really outside of the box.
Yeah, he did some very creative stuff at Angry Bear.
And edgy,
glad,
even.
Yeah, and I'm glad.
I think I wandered in and talked to him when he first got there, so yeah. I'm anxious to try the new menu.
Yeah,
you're going to see a lot of changes at the market. You know, just this is our second chef there. We started with a guy, Julian, who I know you guys met, and he did great things for it. But just
from the refectory.
From the refectory.
Okay. Right.
He was very traditional with his approach, learned under Chef Richard. But Tyler's just very inventive, you know, very outside of the box, just with, and very scrappy with how he uses products.
Yeah.
You know?
So,
how do you come up,
one, not.
How do you come up with concepts? You have many different ones. Again, is it an organic process?
It just starts to come to you, and really when why we've grown is because we have a team that drives us. We have a team that's passionate. You know, we're progressive. We think outside of the box. But, you know, once you breed a culture of creativity, it just starts to perpetuate itself. We really are passionate about traveling with our team. We've taken our team to Copenhagen. We've taken our team to China. You know, we travel the U.S.
To get an idea of what you want to do and just... taste new things. And
yeah, but really where a lot of our creativity comes from, you know, it's good to look at other restaurants. It's
sure.
good to get your inspiration. But when you could start pulling inspiration from things that aren't necessarily food, you know, like getting interior design inspiration from old school Mercedes colors or our grandma's old couch from when we were growing up to, you know, just looking at patterns in nature, you know, from a branding standpoint, from a food standpoint. You know, we recently brought on our head of brand integrity. She worked with Jenny's for a long time. Mm-hmm. She's director of marketing. And she told me once how Jenny from Jenny's Ice Cream gets inspiration from ice cream flavors at a museum, you know, and I think that's
very artistic, right?
Artistic, yeah. And that's how you become an industry leader. You know, if you want to see what the next restaurant's doing and try to replicate it, it's inauthentic. You know,
once I see some parallels between you yeah. guys and Jenny's.
Yeah. How big is your staff now? How many employees do you have? It must be pretty big.
Yeah, I think total we have around 300, 350.
Wow.
Yeah.
300 jobs that didn't exist 9 years ago.
Right. That's one of the great concepts for you is you know, getting employment, to getting jobs to Central Ohio.
Right. A lot of the job growth, though, in Ohio and Central Ohio has been in the service industry, and it's not very good paying, all things being equal. How do you create an environment that's financially healthy for employees in the food business?
Yeah, so it definitely helps to have successful concepts. You
yeah.
know, so if a
server's, so
server's
being
working
a successful
there,
place, yeah.
But, you know, I think it's really just the mindset, you know, like we talk about it often, whether you're paying somebody $8 an hour or 14 or 15, you know, obviously there's financial freedom and that's important for people to have a stress-free life. But whether you're paying them $8 or $15, if it's a terrible work setting, they're not going to be happy in general. And I
yeah.
think for us, the growth has definitely helped maintain retention. I think our retention is top tier. For this type of industry, a lot of times people talk about how there's such a high turnover within the restaurant world,
right.
and you're going to see it, and you know you want people to move on, and you know if they're studying something, you don't want to trap them in. You want to either build them up or help facilitate them onto the next thing. But you know, I think you know, just kind of answering your question, definitely the financial aspect is important, but we put such an emphasis on other aspects of the job. Having them have their voice heard. We've built concepts with people. We've built servers up to GMs. We've built bartenders into regional managers.
There's growth potential.
The growth potential is big.
When the new Crest opened by Children's Hospital, I recognized about three or four of the people from other operations. I think some from Market and some from Crest.
Huh.
At
yeah.
the beginning.
You know, I mentioned our sustainability strategist right now for the restaurant group. He was a busser at the Crest when we first opened.
Okay, I love that.
Our event coordinator at Trism is, she was a server at the Crest as well. So
I talked to her.
Yeah.
We're going to continue our conversation with Abed Al-Shahal. He is co-owner of A&R Creative Group. You've been hearing him talk about some of their eateries, the Crest, Trism now down in the campus area. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. We'd love to hear from people about where they like local, what they think when someone's doing something right out in the farm-to-table, farm-to-fork arena in Central Ohio. So give us a call and let us know what you think. Also with me, Rich Terapak Sr. and Steven Stover. They are both food critics for WOSU. You can see their blogs on the website at WOSU.org. This is All Sides Weekend Chefs in the City on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides Weekend, Chefs in the City. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. My co-hosts, WOSU food critics Steve Stover and Rich Terapak Sr. are also with us. We've been talking about local food today, the movement known as farm to table, farm to fork, the idea that the produce and livestock in season drives the menu. Still with us is Abed Al-Shahal. He's co-owner of A&R Creative, the family-owned company behind a bevy of Central Ohio eateries, including Crest Gastropub, Alchemy Juice Bar and Cafe, and many others. We're turning to news in the restaurant world, so if you have a question or comment about news, give us a call, 614-292-8513. And let's talk about Alchemy Juice Bar and Cafe. You know, that's something that you're looking to replicate.
Yeah, That's a project that I'm extremely passionate about personally. I studied nutrition in college, and really that approach as food as prevention, food as medicine, and you know, it's a very unique concept in that it's a cafe, juice bar, smoothies. We're not just limited to local sourcing, but we're sourcing ingredients from abroad, acai from Brazil, pitaya from Southeast Asia.
Because that's the only place you can get it.
Yeah,
right.
Goji berry, although that's, I know there's a Ohio State professor who's establishing a goji berry farm here in Ohio, so that'd be exciting.
About time.
You know, but also, you know, kind of throwing in some local ingredients. We did a pawpaw smoothie once.
Oh, yummy.
But really the other approach to alchemy that's maybe not one that's we've put a huge emphasis on, but something that we really are excited about is the integration of healthcare and food. Mm-hmm. One of the co-founders, Alexis Joseph, is a registered dietitian. And, you know, so if you're a customer coming in, you might ask some questions about the menu, but you might book a one-on-one consultation because you might have an eating disorder, your daughter might have cancer, and to have a registered dietitian allows you to legally prescribe food as medicine and actually do diets.
So wow.
That's something that
we... And the
we,
fact that you're located catty corner from Children's Hospital is not an accident.
It's definitely intentional.
Well, you can get some of the most unhealthy food in the world in hospitals.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's
is it equally intentional that the TRISM, which is also more of a healthy food, is located near the Ohio State campus?
Yeah, you know, as students, I think that...
It's a counterpoint to everything else.
Yeah, I think just as a restaurant group as a whole, there's been several times where we've seen a location, like, you know, this is a great location, let's build a concept around that. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think Alchemy is a prime example of it. We were approached by the developer there. We were like, you know, what would work well here? And then that's how the creativity starts to come. It's like it really forces you to understand the community around you. You know, it forces you to understand the staff that you're working with and where the potential is. And, you know, we build concepts around people. We build concepts around locations. And I think that's, you know, minus our ADD and our OCD, that's a big reason why every concept's a little bit different.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and you've got a gym upstairs, so you can get healthy and then come down and have your smoothie.
That's definitely a big plus. Mm-hmm. So,
jeez.
I'm anxious to go to TRISM, too.
So, yeah, Alchemy is a concept that we are – we never – build a concept with intention of scaling. That's not what drives us, but really with the demand that we've seen for Alchemy, we know that's a concept that we see potential in. So we will, you'll be seeing a couple here popping up very soon.
Ha ha. Breaking news, perhaps?
Yeah.
Mark in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Mark.
Hi, Abed. I'm a big fan of what you're doing. You have the best mac and cheese and hamburgers at the Crest on Parsons.
The hamburgers, yes.
I want to ask your thoughts on the entrepreneurial culture in Central Ohio. You've obviously had a lot of experience starting different ventures, and I'm interested in your experience in raising money, in starting up a business, and whatever you might be doing to try to improve that culture.
Yeah, I think the culture here in Columbus, Ohio, from the startup world is pretty remarkable. You know, not just from a food setting, what's happening in the technology world, you know, ideas like the Idea Foundry, there's all these startup events left and right. You know, from a raising money standpoint, you know, I think there's a lot of opportunities. Groups like ECDI, the Finance Fund, SBA loans. You know, we've been
the Small Business Administration.
Yeah, right. Small Business Administration, and you know. Sometimes the hard part is finding the right investors. You know, if you don't want to go the financing route, it's who in your circle can back you. But I really think it's important. I think a lot of emerging entrepreneurs have this vision of writing a business plan, raising millions of dollars. But the way that we grew was as grassroots as possible. You know, we started working in a carryout convenience store.
That your dad bought, right?
Yeah, my dad...
That's how you learned to work together, I'd imagine.
Forced us to work together. So
if you didn't kill each other, you'd work well together.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
That's the way of the world right now. You don't raise $1 million now to open a white tablecloth restaurant. It's younger entrepreneurial guys like you and like Chris Crater and like Kevin and Katie Malamy, all these young small restaurant groups that are growing and growing. And that's what makes, in my opinion, Columbus one of the most exciting markets in the country.
We didn't forget you, Rick Mailer.
Yeah, Mark, Mark, thanks a lot. Do you, I guess one thing I want to know from you, Mark, thank you so much for that call. Abed, is what, where do you, I mean, do you like to eat in town? Where do you like to go and what do you respect out there among your competitors, if you want to look at that way?
Yeah, no, I have a lot of respect for, you know, like my competitors. You know, I think it just, it builds the culture here in Columbus, Ohio. But really what I really enjoy the little like hole in the wall places, you know, when I go to somewhere and it's like, wow, they did this on a very crafty budget. They built the tables themselves. They painted the walls themselves. You know, there's a level of me that, that's our roots. That's, you know, what you just see the hard work, you know, it's not this like overly designed places. It just
personal.
Feels personal.
Yeah.
It feels like they put their heart and soul.
La Cavala is one, a place like that.
Yeah.
I think that's Copious an example.
Built their own tables. Mm-hmm.
I just went to a place called Zhu Tai yesterday. I brought my daughter. We were sitting down. They make hand noodles off of Bethel Road.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's right.
Where is it? On Bethel?
Bethel, right there across from Marshall's, kind of in that plaza.
It's right in. It's
near Buckeye Pho?
Yeah, on the other side of Buckeye Pho.
Okay.
You know.
Across the street.
Exactly.
On the north side, okay.
You know, went there. It's just yeah, grassroots. You know, I do appreciate a restaurant that's well designed. I have respect for what we do, respect for what North Star does, what Chris Crater is doing, and you know, it's elevating the city. It's putting us on a national setting. But finding those little hole in the wall places, that's when I go out. That's what I like to go.
That's kind of a fun little strip mall. It's sort of like the International Strip Mall, USA.
Well, actually, yeah,
across the street as well. Yeah, you know,
I did a story about that once, and I counted 42. International and ethnic restaurants and groceries on Bethel between Olentangy and Sawmill. It's just incredible.
Right, and Morse has its lot going for it, too, in that department.
Sure.
Yeah, lots of great stuff.
Yeah, Momo Gar is one in that Sargate Market. That's a great place.
Mm-hmm. Sarah in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Sarah.
Hi, how are you?
Fine, thank you.
Good. I just had a question about just going along with this concept of sustainability. First of all, I've eaten, I've tried Trism, Alchemy, and The Crest, and I love it. I loved that all three of them cater towards, I have celiac, and I love that you guys in your kitchen are really accommodating and sound on those procedures as well. My question is just about this concept of, sustainability, and there's this group maybe amongst like other juice or healthy eateries, quote unquote, around the area that focus solely on organic, and so they're not necessarily concerned, let's say, about the carbon footprint that it leaves. They're just focused on getting organic, and I think there's this misconception around people that they dismiss local, they dismiss the entire concept of sustainability, and they solely focus on organic. So how do you guys see your education process or your promoting of sustainability on a larger scale? You know, the fact that you guys are creating a model that is reducing carbon footprint. So buying all your produce from miles and miles across the world isn't necessarily sustainable, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So,
Abed?
Yeah, I think that just speaks to, you know, how many layers there are when you're making a decision. You know, some people like making their decision based off the nutritional value. They don't want pesticides and carcinogens and these substances entering their body or their family's body. There's other people who are focused on environmental output. There's people who are focused on building the community around you. You know, really our philosophy is definitely appeal to many. You know, I think if our restaurants were based off of all of organic ingredients, it would be inaccessible from a financial standpoint, just with where we're at right now currently in Central Ohio. But we definitely use a philosophy of the Dirty Dozen. The Dirty Dozen is, you know, certain crops are used with a lot of pesticides, the celeries. There's a lot of other examples there. But for us, it's what is that balance? You know, when we're making a decision, you know, what's environmentally sustainable, what's building the community around us, what's healthy, and, you know, what's financially, what's the consumer willing to spend on that? Mm-hmm. You know, the juice bar that you're mentioning, I think it's very important what they're doing because there's people out there who want to live their lifestyle with all organic ingredients. But for us, you know, we're at a lower price point. We are thoughtful with what we source, you know, but we're maybe not as diligent with only organic foods. And it's kind of that not everybody can afford all organic. You know, you start talking health food access and it's not as easy. So.
Yeah, sure. Particularly students.
Zero, thanks. Yeah. Clint, friend of Abed.
Hi.
Hi, Clint. You're on the air.
Hi. Yeah. So, Abed, hey, I just wanted to, you know, let you know all of us here in Columbus, we're really proud of you, and we really appreciate what you've done for the community, the culture of food. And, you know, I just wanted to ask kind of, I remember, you know, you've come so far just sitting around with your friends in college philosophizing about, you know, food. And, you know,
sounds like Clint was one of those.
Yeah, Clint's one of my best friends.
I was. I remember talking, you know, my background's in genetics, and I remember having conversations with you about, you know, like nutritional genomics and the epigenetic changes that nutrition can contribute to long term. And, man, you've just come so far changing the whole culture of food and the community here we got. And so I just really wanted to know, man, where do you see yourself in 10, 20 years, you know?
Yeah. Well, first off, yeah, Clint's one of my best friends. You know, there's a reason that we've gotten as far as we have. We used to hang around and really have these types of conversations. You know, and the guy's about to be a doctor, so
congratulations,
a lot of respect for him. Yeah. And he's gonna have a kid, so mad respect there. You know, I feel like, you know, a lot of our conversations early on, we were so micro focused with the nutrition, genomics, the genetics, focused on like the micro side of food. And, you know, Clint and I would spend a lot of time kind of making fun of social science. And we'd be like, social science, that's not science. You know, it's just studying people. Let's see the micro details. But really kind of jumping into the restaurant world and building a community around me started showing me how important that is to make catalytic change. You know, we could be focused on individual things and the nutrients of what's entering my body. But unless you're starting to solve issues of food access, local processing, there's no processing in this city, you know, aggregation of farmers, logistics are a mess. You know, these things are going to continue to be unapproachable and unfeasible. For me, you know, I have another couple restaurant concepts under our sleeve. We'll be diligent on building the team to sustain this thing. That's very important. And, you know, I really want to start moving towards you know, the community organizing, the local food system strategy, you know, food access, you know, some of these things. I'm working with a group here in Columbus, Ohio right now on a large-scale processing facility.
Okay.
You think of Columbus's food scene, restaurants are the first thing to come to mind. Mm-hmm. You start going into northeast Ohio, there's large food manufacturing, and minus maybe Jenny's and Marzetti's and some, you know, up-and-coming local artisan producers. Darista Dips is an example. The infrastructure is not there, and it's not really allowing us to build that culture of food manufacturing to take our city to the next level. So,
we only have a few minutes left, but I know that you guys are teaching a couple classes coming up. There's going to be a demonstration at the State Fair. Yeah. What else is going on?
Well, we're at the State
Steve
Fair
Stover
August
and Rich Chirapack.
Doing chicken again.
The poultry boys, and we've got a second 35th celebration after teaching. And there are only a few seats left, I'm told, on August 29th, and then we're going to do a dinner party.
And we're not going to do a third.
Cap City Diner is going to open in Dublin next week on the 11th. Veronica Kitchen and Provisions has its new place open on North 4th. Taste the Future, the big food fest, honoring or supporting Columbus State, are going to honor Cameron Mitchell.
And you can learn more about that on the
I just
chef's
put up
website.
A blog today, and so that's some hot news. What other news you got there, Rich?
Well, you see that after 75 years, Johnson's Real Ice Cream is opening another shop outside of Bexley, and I wish them luck, but they dare not close the one on Main Street.
Okay, well, that is all the time we have. Abed Al-Shahal, thank you so much for joining us today.
What
a great It's a lot of fun talking with you.
Yeah, you're doing a great job.
Thank you.
Abed Al-Shahal is the co-owner of A&R Creative Group. They're the ones behind everything from the Crest Tavern to Trism. Check it out. Go on their website. You'll see all the restaurants that they have opened up just in the last 8 years. Amazing. Also, Rich Sherapack Sr., thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Ann. It's always fun.
And Steve Stover, thanks to you as well.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.